The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rocks from Ensemble, and I'm thrilled to be bringing to you the podcast Engine Room. It's devoted entirely to the practices or the business of financial advice. Over the course of the next many months, we're going to be interviewing Australia's best independent boutique advice firms, their practice managers, their GMs, on what environment is conducive to being a best practice, how they keep talent, how they attract talent, and what the future of financial advice is. It's the Engine Room podcast. Welcome aboard.
If you're one of the many advisors who told us, I don't need another good idea, I need support to actually implement, then this is for you. We have launched Ensemble Progress, a professional development membership built for advisors who want momentum, not just inspiration. With protected time to implement, peer-led accountability, and practitioners sharing what's actually working, Ensemble Progress helps you turn intention into consistent, visible results. Instead of the important work getting pushed to next quarter, it gets done. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
Hello, welcome to another edition of The Engine Room. I'm joined here in Sydney today with Alex McMillan, who's the founder and CEO of Seedly, which is a really cool name. It's got a green theme, and although we're in a podcast, we've both worn green. So for those of you who like to get a bit of visual with their audio, feel free to have a look at the video. But welcome, Alex.
Thank you, Roxy. Yeah, pleasure to be here and sort of share a little bit about our story.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation because you're a business that, although this is your own business and you're doing it, you've been in the industry for a little while, mm-hmm. and you kind of now know what you want to niche into. And when I say niche, it almost feels a bit stupid because, like, wealth accumulators is not a niche; it's quite number the largest.
Yeah, quite a few people out there.
but there you go. But isn't that funny the way I've just mentioned that? I mean, I was a wealth accumulator advisor. Within the last 10 years, the pendulum had swung. Typically, when I've been interviewing, it's been retirees. And I'm now getting the green shoots. There you go. That's a Seedly thing.
Yep.
Back into that. But let's start with why Seedly, the name?
Why Seedly? Yeah, it came to fruition from, you know, some deep thoughts about who we want to service and the sort of practice that we want to grow, the mindset that we want to engage with. And we sort of boiled it down and also thought about, well, if we're going to be a little bit different, why would our naming, like starting off with the name, why would that be a similar naming convention to a lot of other practices out there? Why would we throw in a word like wealth or financial? Why not treat it like a brand that has engagement outside of the financial services world? So how do you stand out by being the same? You can't. We wanted a name that felt newer, younger, fresher, different.
Yep.
And echoed the ethos of what we stand for, which is growth.
Growth, yeah. Yeah, it's we can put the full nerd hat on and ask whether it's a monocotyledon or a dicotyledon for everyone out there who's got memories of year 7 biology. But now I also was stalking as be my wont, and you know, off air we talk about, you know, tell us about your backstory and how does a guy who grew up in Indonesia. And I suppose, well, when did you move there? Like, because you did your entire secondary education in Jakarta, is that right?
Entire primary too.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, what? That's very interesting because I'm not picking up on any accent.
No, well, it used to be there. I guess I've traveled the path less traveled and had a little bit of a different upbringing to a lot of my peers, which I think kind of flowed into the type of practice that I wanted to grow.
What were your family doing? I mean, I spent time in Papua New Guinea when I was growing up, so
very curious. Okay. Yeah. My dad was an electrical engineer, actually. Yep. Worked for a paper company cutting down the rainforest. So kind of the antithesis of the Seedly brand, but no, we moved.
Shout out.
Yeah. Sorry, Dad. But we moved there when I was 5 for my dad's job. My mum is actually Indonesian.
Yep.
You'd never pick it looking at me, but I am half Indonesian. So sort of a reluctant move back home for my mum. She loved living in Australia.
Yeah.
And we started school there at this amazing school, Jakarta International School. And the opportunity came up to sort of extend our stay, and we never came back because the environment of that school was just so fantastic. My parents were like, we can't pull them out. Like, they'll never get that that culture and experience ever again. And I think it was really fundamental in developing me as an individual that leads into how I do business. Yes.
So I just want to unpack that, right?
Yeah, there's a little bit there.
In 2000, even in the whole time you've lived there, it was a genuine third world country. I've spent lots of time in the Philippines with, yep, with my business. And there is a genuine, when you come from Australia and you see the safety net we've got here, you acknowledge the superannuation compulsion and whatnot there. What are some of the things that, if you could sort of wave your magic wand, some of the financial things that you'd like to see implemented over there to help bring that country up?
Oh,
didn't expect that in this podcast.
No, that's a deep, deep question there. I think it really boils down to education and the opportunity that then provides. There's so much talent and goodwill in the people in Indonesia, and they just unfortunately don't get the opportunities that we get in Australia. That's what we experience more than anything. That's our privilege, is the opportunity that we're given living in this beautiful country. And you really do experience that juxtaposition when you live in a place like Jakarta. Because I wasn't living in Bali along the beach. We were living in the beating heart of a 15, I think it's like 18 million.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest cities in the world.
Yeah, people live in the greater Jakarta region now. But we lived in these amazing expat compounds with gates and security, yep, right next to someone living in literally a tin shack,
yep,
picking out bottles from the river to sell to, yep, try and feed their family. And I think you'd do yourself a disservice to not acknowledge your own privilege there,
yep,
and have that shape how you treat and interact with the world. So I think it changed my mindset quite a lot living there.
Yep.
And I try and embrace the lessons I learned over there.
And what made you come to Australia?
Well, Australia was always home. Like, I was born in Castle Hill, lived there till I was 5. It was where we always came back to for holidays, for school holidays. But it was funny, like, it was always home, but never quite home.
Yep.
Because I hadn't lived here for so long. So finished school when I was 17, and I had to move back to Australia for uni. That was the natural progression. So moved out of home, moved in with friends at 17. Actually, it was via a gap year in Byron Bay, but I won't talk too much about that on this podcast. No, it was
a whole year in Byron.
Well,
don't talk to it.
I won't go into specifics.
Shout out to all the law enforcement people, the listeners.
It was semi forced because we were on the Northern Hemisphere calendar in,
of course,
Asia. So we graduated end of May.
Yeah,
had till March to start uni.
Yeah,
I had a friend with a house in Byron, and she said, "Come live with me." And I worked in the local ice cream shop, and we enjoyed ourselves in the evenings, and it was a really good time to also learn some life lessons before starting uni.
Yeah, would have been.
Ensemble Progress is for advisors who want real momentum, not just inspiration. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
So then you did a business orientated degree at university, but it wasn't financial planning. When did the spark happen? Is it a spark? When did you make a decision that financial planning was something you wanted to pursue?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think when you study finance at university, especially more than a decade ago, I'm showing my age here, it's definitely catered more towards the institutional side of things, more investment banking, funds management. It doesn't, at least not then, it does certainly now, you can major in financial planning. But back then it didn't cater for that more human connection and relationship driven career, which once I finished university, at the time I was working at Merivale, next door, I was working in an establishment, at the restaurant upstairs, actually Est, which was.
For those of you who are not Sydney siders, a really big, really busy, very trendy hospitality venue. And, so you were fine dining, were you?
I was fine dining, yes. And I think I learned a lot of lessons there, like the standards, the commitment to excellence, working in that environment, and also the sort of care factor that you gave towards the guests. I think that led to me wanting to find a career that accommodated that want to look after and nurture people and have that more human, you know, client consumer connection rather than just in a sort of business to business role.
How did you handle rude customers? I've always wanted to ask that as well. So here you are. So you've grown up as you've intimated in a juxtaposition of privilege.
Yep.
And now you're on the other side of that where you're serving people who at an expensive restaurant who may or may not treat you well. How did you handle it when you weren't treated well?
Yeah, it's funny that. And you see the different sides of people and you also see how people grow as they sort of advance in life. Definitely a lot of conflict resolution skills were taught in that environment. Yes, to a certain degree, the customer's always right, but also my manager at the time, Carissa, was great in creating an environment that allowed you to also be, stand up for yourself and not be bullied, which some customers could do. But interesting, it wasn't the sort of the regulars, the really high-flying executives who were ever rude like that.
Interesting.
The ones who were really well off, really doing well, ordering the several thousand dollar bottles of wine on a regular basis, they were normally the most polite. They were the ones who knew your name, looked after you as well. And you sort of...
Probably the reason they got wealthy, maybe.
Yeah, correct. I think there's some lessons there in tact and respect and how looking after everyone in your sphere that you interact with there's a lot of benefit from doing so. Yeah.
And you've finished your degree, you're learning great soft skills.
Yeah.
Soft skills which, to be honest, are now back trendy again after 10 years of sort of regulation contraction. What got you into financial planning?
Yeah, it was definitely that desire to connect with people on a more human level, help nurture them along.
But you could have done that as an accountant. You had some calls in accounting.
Very true, yeah. Very true. I liked the idea of helping people grow wealth. And the first practice I landed at very much leaned into that way of engaging with clients. It was more about those early years, helping people pick up assets and grow their wealth. And I realized that's what I want to do to the extent that we scope out retirees.
Yep.
Like we don't work with them. It's not where my head's at. It's not what our strengths and skills lie at. We want to help people get there in the first place.
So quite a lot of your clients would be a similar age to yourself. I mean, even as you get older, you might be taking some of your clients with you. Is that right as far as?
Yeah, it's one of the fun things working in this space, this niche, if you want to call it that.
It's not a niche.
It's not a niche, yeah. Right?
It's for people. It's just, one of the fun things are that you share life, sort of.
Yeah, I'm experiencing the same problems or dilemmas that my clients are facing when they're tossing up. Oh, how do we pay for private school fees? Or bloody hell, daycare is burning a hole in my pocket. How do I keep investing when I'm bleeding money?
Yep.
These are the same things I'm experiencing.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's really just, it becomes less of a advisor-client relationship, more of a peer relationship, and you're guiding your peers. And that's so fulfilling to help your friends make smart financial decisions that empower them.
Yeah, it feels a bit more like coaching than advice sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think we do take on that element of coach, yeah.
And what do you do outside of work? What's, do you have any particular hobbies or things that you can do? Because you've now running your own business, which is a lot of pressure because you're also advising and running a business. What do you do outside of work?
Certainly is. I've got a young family. My wife works a lot of hours at Westpac, and so I look after my daughter on Mondays, which is amazing to have that flexibility as a business owner. I think that's fundamental if we're going to grow the sort of business that we want. We also want to cater to our staff's well-being.
And you are literally going through the same thing your clients. So you're doing the daycare thing.
That's it. Daycare's your
book. Got all that. Okay.
Yep. The big thing I do, my main hobby is cycling.
Yeah.
I there's a masochist side of cycling where, you know, to get better, you kind of have to hurt yourself and train hard. And I love that grind. It sort of helps channel that energy for me when the pressures build up in business. I've got that release that I can go on a really hard ride and hurt myself up a climb put myself in the pain cave, as my former colleague used to refer to it. And that's really where I enjoy spending time is getting out on the bike, getting out into nature, on road, off road. That's my happy place.
And just a public service announcement: if you're out there, don't Google pain cave. I have no idea what's going to come up, but not endorsed by us all.
I think probably just a lot of sweaty cyclists.
Yeah, not a classy image. Yeah. Well, you've now you kicked off Seedly per se. You've got a streak of independence about you. You're self licensed. But for 10 years you were working in an organization had very similar sorts of clients. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. It was a bit of a multidisciplinary practice. Yeah. So lending, property.
So life stages was a client, right?
Yeah, correct. Because this is one of the lessons I've learned. Well, the advice is all well and good. Strategies can be detailed out to the nth degree. But if you can't help the client execute and facilitate the outcomes that the client needs, well, your advice is not that valuable, really. If the client gets their statement of advice and they look at that lengthy document and they put it on the coffee table and never take action, well, it's a bit of a shame and a bit of a waste, really. So those are some lessons I learned from that practice, which we tried to recreate and imitate in a slightly different way. We're definitely more focused on being strategic guidance, but having the right referral partners in place to execute on the outcomes.
So Seedly today, I'm going to read your words back to you.
Cool.
Seedly's roots stem from a desire to address how confusing building wealth can be today.
Yeah.
Old rules don't always work, and traditional advice hasn't kept up with the way our generation lives, earns, and dreams. We understand you because we are you. We're buying homes, planning families, and figuring out what a meaningful life looks like. We bring that lived experience to every client we support. There you go. So we just had an informal conversation, mm-hmm. and I asked you all sorts of things, and you fundamentally have stayed completely true to the front part of your web.
Good.
There you go. So to you and the team who put the website together, congratulations. You have articulated it there. So tell me, let's change gears. Tell me about Seedly. And let's also acknowledge that although you've been doing this for a decade, Seedly is your new baby. You're kicking off. What's a Seedly client look like?
Seedly client, yeah. I guess there's a few different avatars of our ideal client. Or when I say our ideal client, I think rather the client that we're the best fit for, that we can add the most value to. Certainly emerging young professionals who are starting, you know, they finished university, starting to earn well. What do they sort of do with this now? How do they turn salary into wealth? That's not always an easy transition. Changing your mindset to being strategic beyond a savings account, actually creating wealth. So certainly emerging young professionals, young families, that's a time of massive financial upheaval. Kids place an extraordinary, not burden, I wouldn't say that word, but stress on your finances, and navigating those stresses while still creating wealth, particularly outside of the family home, I think is the earlier you can start those conversations and create those good habits, the better off the client is long term. So we typically want to engage clients earlier than perhaps a typical advisor.
Yep.
Because we see the value in getting started early and helping grow that ideal client. Yeah.
Oh, two questions on that. First question is, you're talking about, you know, people have to save their way to wealth when they're young, right? Because most of them don't have a capital event in their 20s or 30s. Some do inheritances, some do employer share scheme, but the foundation would be, are you saving more than you earn? And that becomes increasingly difficult with all of those cost pressures from young families. So when you say mindset, do you employ just positive mindset reinforcement, or is there some form of discipline that you have to do with clients for their savings?
Yeah, that is an interesting question.
It's a wry smile, everyone. So getting both. So give me some examples of how client names have sort of how you've managed to change manage a client who potentially couldn't save into someone who's building that foundation.
Yeah, I think a lot of the value of our advice, how we sort of because we're talking about really complex long-term financial decisions, helping clients understand, well, if I make these sacrifices now, I'll be better off in 10, 20, 30 years. That can be really difficult to visualize. So we always do try and map that out for the client, and we do lean heavily on our projections. And the thing that we do first and foremost is show them if they do nothing, what happens.
So, and what do you use to do the projections, incidentally?
We use IntelliFlow. Yep. I've used quite a few different financial planning, CRMs, and modeling software. I think IntelliFlow are market leading with their client-facing, client-friendly modeling capabilities.
So at what stage do you, so you're saying you use this as a real lever, yeah, as a real wake-up call, and then the numbers Absolutely. Become theirs, not yours, yeah? Is that
correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like we just plot in exactly their financial universe.
Live in front of them?
Absolutely. I love doing modeling live with clients,
yeah,
and helping them understand, all right, we're going to pull this lever now and make this change. We're going to, I don't know, it could be as simple as we're going to cut $3,000 a year in living expenses and we're going to make some extra super contributions. And let's look at that over 20 years, what that difference will make. And just help them understand, well, if I make that decision, this is my projected outcome, so that they can really get to terms with the gravity of the decisions they're making now for their future self.
And I've got another couple of questions. Mm-hmm. So, and quite often you've intimated, you know, just by the nature of the sort of clients you're talking about, whatnot, a lot of young couples.
Yeah.
Or people who are thinking about being a couple, couples who are thinking about having children. That's kind of, there's some categories there. Now, you're an advisor in the practice and also the managing director, but you've also got another senior advisor, Venetia, and she's, you guys are roughly the same-ish age.
Yep.
Everything's the same, but obviously you're a man and she's a woman, right? So when you have couples in,
mm-hmm,
and you're doing that whole projection budget thing, what are the different, what do you sense as the different ways in which you both get to the same message with clients, or are there any differences?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I've really thought about that in the past, about how our delivery differs.
It may not.
Yeah, I think we do try and stay true to the style of advice we want to give to, yep, clients.
Because all stereotypes are out the window these days, right? So, you know, in a relationship, who's the spender?
Yeah.
Who's the saver? It's literally random.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm a living example of that. I'm sort of the main primary caretaker of our daughter. My wife's job is not that flexible.
Yep.
So I stepped up into maybe the non-gender normative role.
Yeah.
And I take quite a lot of pride in that, actually. I love the relationship I have with my daughter. But you're right, like the norms are out the window.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can maybe always engage the man as the main decision.
100%. That's what I was
crazy.
That's, yeah, what I was getting to is that you've and I think you answered the question, which is that you built, if you're out there listening, you have a look at Seedly's website, seedly.com.au, pretty easy. Seedly with an I, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a look at the deliberate wording. Every word talks to the person in your website. And I think that similarity of your approach is probably powerful and also scalable, right? Because I think that as this sort of grows and people refer more, you're going to need some more advisors. And if you guys have got that real homogenous sort of strategy as far as dealing with people, it works. You started talking about IntelliFlow.
Yep.
Okay, so they're obviously part of your tech stack.
They are, yes.
We had a conversation a few months ago, I think, on another topic. I mean, you'd moved to IntelliFlow last year sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Without denigrating who you came from, why?
Yeah. Our tech stack has evolved, I suppose, rapidly in the last 24 months because we have, and this is a philosophy I've really tried to instill in everyone we bring into the team. We've embraced a culture of failure.
Culture of what?
A culture of failure.
Failure. Yep.
I want to experiment, push the boundaries, figure out what do we want out of the practice, out of life, out of our tech stack. All of these things are really fundamental about how we approach financial advice as a business. So we looked at our old tech stack and it wasn't quite working for a few different ways. It was a bit disjointed. We thought, well, we want to consolidate that a little bit. We looked at a few different options and IntelliFlow stood out for how we want to deliver advice. Look, like every CRM, it's not perfect, but its core functionality really helps us deliver advice how we want to.
Yep.
Beyond that, we also thought, well, because I have this outsider mentality sometimes, because I haven't perhaps lived the normal life of a single-sided.
Nature, nurture.
Yeah. We looked at, well, why are we looking at only financial planning specific software? Why? And that's kind of what I want my team doing, always pushing the boundaries, asking why.
Yep.
Why are we using that? Why is the system like this? Why is the process like that? Can we do it better? And that's something that we've really deeply leaned into. So most of our work is actually done through monday.com.
Yep.
And that's a generic real, we use the process project management side of it, and our whole lives are on Monday.
Yeah, we use that in Ensemble. We use that to organize events and times, dates, and places, logistics.
Yeah.
The
amount of automations and integrations with other apps, and that is the beating heart of our practice.
Interesting.
IntelliFlow is fundamental for client delivery, but in terms of day-to-day processes, management, even service agreements, invoicing, everything goes out through Monday.
Okay. Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're on just on the Microsoft stack for everything else. Yep. And like in relation to your business, so we mentioned you've got yourself and you've got Vanessa, who's one of your other senior advisors, but you've got a head of corporate growth, Ben, right?
Yeah.
And maybe explain, because the thing about growing is you can't just say we want to grow and not have a strategy around the company growing organic clients. So what is it that you do in corporate growth, and what's that little X factor that your business brings potentially to a listener who's going, well, I love everything here, but where am I getting the clients from?
Absolutely. The rationale behind Ben joining the team was we wanted to have multiple channels of client acquisition. So we thought long and hard about where are we actually sourcing clients from? Yes, absolutely. I love a client referral. Oh, bring in your friend, your colleague. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's going to give you 10, 15, 20%.
Yeah, exactly. The reliance on that as a channel for growth, I think, is limited. On top of that, we have a lot of referral partners, accountants, mortgage brokers, buyer's agents.
Yeah.
The way we're structured, we sort of enable a lot of business for them. So they're sort of incentivized to keep helping us grow because it helps them grow. But again, you're taking all of your lead generation and placing it in someone else's hands. And we thought that feels unsustainable because when things are good, they'll refer, but people get busy and maybe they'll forget to refer or not refer as regularly and predictably as you would like. So Ben is out there engaging workplaces, employers. How do we bring not necessarily financial planning? Yes, that's the natural stepping stone and evolution, but we actually just want to bring financial well-being into the corporate workplace. Why? Well, look at what we're spending money on in workplaces. We're spending a lot of money on physical well-being programs. A lot of people have, you know, OH&S ergonomic experts come in and set your desk up properly. Great. That helps avoid things like lower back injuries and all those, and that's great. A large focus on mental well-being programs, which are incredibly important. But we thought long and hard about, well, what's the roots? What's the stem of that? Like, where is that coming from, that stress? What are people really stressing about in Australia at the moment? It's their finances. So can we address that first and help maybe mitigate the need for the mental well-being programs? So we introduced a program to prioritize financial well-being and programs through a digital platform, providing digital advice to clients.
So that's implemented in conjunction with the employer.
Correct, yes.
Wonderful, yep.
So the employer gets their own branded website.
Yep.
Their clients get, their staff, their team get access to this digital advice platform, sort of a freemium model. They can pay for limited scope advice.
Yep.
They can also engage with other financial services. So if they want to review their loan or if they want to review their health insurance, all of just one easy, accessible dashboard to facilitate all of that. And naturally, they also get to engage with a coach. So there's a financial coach there that can then help say.
Is that a part of a Seedly business or that's a joint venture business?
Yeah. So that's an integration with Money GPS.
Got it.
Yeah. So we have our white label branded sites for referral partners, but also if an employer wants to take out a site, they can have their own branded site and any financial planning leads and come to us.
How long have you been doing that for?
It's a new thing. It's 4 or 5 months old now.
Okay. And how's it looking? What are the green shoots? Yes, I get to say so many of these puns.
It's definitely a slow burn because we're trying to target organizations who want to invest in staff.
Yep.
And they've got to go through a few hoops to get the right decision makers to say, to green light, okay, well, we're going to spend X amount on our staff per month.
Yep.
Because we think it's going to reduce financial stress, increase productivity.
Yep.
So you're trying to help educate them as well about the long-term gains there. But we're seeing some real progress now with employers wanting to invest in their staff, which I think is amazing.
And from a commercial perspective, you've probably very philosophically, we go out and get 10 of these. 10 of these, and you start doing the numbers, and eventually then, you know, if you've got 1,000 inquiries on a platform per year and you get 5% conversion, that's 50 new families. Like, that's a, you know, so these are the sorts of maths that a growth-orientated person will do. And I suppose the only thing that you've done so far is you've managed to keep your costs. So you've white-labeled a few. You haven't built a bespoke platform, which is, you know, 20 years ago people tried doing that. You're joint venturing. I mean, as we know with one of my other businesses and a few other things where you're in control of the client, but you're limiting your CapEx around building out those offerings as well. So although if I'm listening to this, you might think, oh, this guy's trying to do everything. Well, no, he's being very strategic in the bit that you own is the education, the education and the culture part of it and the delivery of the financial advice when they're ready. Is that fair?
That's absolutely fair. I think what we tried to do was create this ecosystem that clients can, well, just general everyday Australians can engage with and take the stepping stones.
Future clients.
Yeah. How can we engage them earlier, but not just provide them a newsletter, but actually add valuable, tangible value?
Yeah, look, I've interviewed a few planning practices who've done that, but very few. If I interview 100, there might be two or three who are doing that. But I do think that for wealth accumulators, it is something that there is a moral contract that someone has to help them.
Right.
And the government is aware of that. And things such as, should there be an incentive for employers to do this via the government? Well, the government's managed to make it so financial planning is pretty hard for wealth accumulators.
Absolutely.
So, that's it. So culture of failure. Okay, you've only been going a little while, but what are some of the lessons? Give me two lessons that you've learnt. So some of these listeners out there who are contemplating potentially kicking off their own business don't have to make.
Yeah.
You're a gift to them.
Culture of failure. It's something we've tried to create a process and system around as well. Immediately, I think of the tech missteps I've taken, the way that we've built a process around a bit of tech and realised 3-4 months in, this doesn't actually work that well.
So when did you know? Did you know early and you kept doing it because you felt like you were too far in, or did you, like, when?
Yeah. So what we do, or the system we've built around this culture of failure, are regular monthly check-ins with the entire team.
Yep.
And ask them because, look, as the practice owner, I might
know the boss. Just put the bag. Like, I'm your employee. I'm your team member. Yeah. Right? Take me through that conversation. Yep. So it's not like, how did you fail today? How often did you fail? I'm not sure it's like that, but how do you open that door up?
We call it our process improvement meeting.
Great. Okay. Process improvement meeting. So you're actually asking the people who are on the tools.
Correct.
About, can we build better mousetraps?
Yes. Okay. And then not just asking them to poke holes and things, but also encouraging them to think about solutions. I mean, it's inevitable. People will come to the principal, the business, the business owner with problems. Things aren't working. But I'm trying to encourage and foster this culture of, how would you solve it? And have that, I suppose, that responsibility that people can feel empowered to think about, this is how I think that process should be improved because that makes my life easier. Can we talk about that? Can we discuss that? Can we find a way to keep improving things? So, we certainly made a lot of missteps, but the team help calibrate and fine tune what we're doing so that we're always, it's a bit of that Kaizen approach, you know, continuous improvement. The big swings are great. They rarely work out. So you want to foster that culture that you can make those little improvements day by day, month by month, and keep striving towards that practice that is the efficient, beautiful machine you're trying for.
That's what we call engine room.
Yeah.
In a second, we're going to deep dive on everything you've just said about the culture of your team, the delivery of your team, et cetera. It'd just be totally remiss of me not to take a bit of a detour down a musical path.
Okay.
So you mentioned there that people who employees just need help with money, and you see a lot of the stress has got to do with money. And I'm looking at your website, and each of you list a couple of the songs that define you. And the one thing I see in your three songs, which would have been obvious, is Biggie Smalls' "Mo Money, Mo Problem." But you've gone with "Up, Up and Away" by Kid Cudi, "Giving Up Air," "Temper Trap," and I will read your thing there. Okay. "This Slaps Hard," effervescent, uplifting, and full of charisma, and "Indecision" by Sampha. So, you've obviously thought deeply about these songs. Why?
Yeah, I've given you my "Mo Money, Mo Problem" one.
It captures all.
Basically, it's financial planning.
Yeah.
But so what made you choose those?
Yeah, well,
you didn't expect that question.
No, I didn't.
You're putting yourself out there. You're going
to
get them.
That's it. I mean, the whole point of these buyers is to make us
approachable. Yeah.
People realize we're normal. We listen to music, and we're not sitting in some ivory tower telling people how to invest their money. Yeah. Kid Cudi, just a long-term favorite of mine. I think I always go for music that has soul to it. I like, honestly, it's genreless, if you ask me, about the soulfulness of a song. And Kid Cudi, I think, does a great job with his lyrics of finding, engages you, hooks you in.
Yep.
Temper Trap, the lead singer, Dougie, is actually Indonesian. So there's a little bit of a connection there.
Yeah.
And that song, as soon as I heard it and saw the music video, I was like, that just fills me with energy. It's something that gets you out of bed and has you tapping your foot. It's brilliant. Indecision by Sampha.
Is it just a piss take on people procrastinating?
No.
That's what I'm reading it as. If I'm potentially your client, I'm feeling to myself, this guy seems so fun, but he wants me to make a fucking decision.
It is a bit of a reference to my other love, Arsenal Football Club. So I'm a massive football soccer fan. And when Arsenal made a big signing this past summer, that was the where they brought a former academy kid back into the club, and it was this big emotional a moment. That was the song that encapsulated it all. So I felt amiss to not have that listed as one of my songs of the moment.
So for everyone out there who thinks they're going to work for a psycho, the good news is that Vanessa, the other senior planner, she's running with "Here Comes the Sun" by the Beatles, "Happy Song" by Imogen Heap, and "All I Want for Christmas" Mariah Carey. The third one's a weird one, but the first two give me an indication of there's some pretty upbeat ones there. But you don't have to answer for her behalf. She can defend herself for the Mariah Carey one. But productivity obviously peaks December every year. So, all I'm saying is that we've spoken a bit about your business. I'm just going to ask you a couple of more punchy questions.
Sure.
But then we're going to go into the culture. And I'm just trying to paint the picture here that you guys are putting out there, specifically a lot about you and your culture and your people, purely to make sure that that's the sort of people you're attracting. Yeah?
Yeah.
Like attracts like, right? So with the business that you do cash flow management. Is there any particular product or strategy or that you utilize for cash flow management? If there isn't. It's just a tech thing, yeah?
Yeah, it's more of a tech thing. We have dabbled a little bit with some other tracking things we do with our corporate wellbeing program. We do include Flux, Flux Finance, as an app that people can plug their banking in with open banking to help track that. So that's.
Do you remember we get a link for Flux, mate? Yep, beautiful. Yep.
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah, I think they got bought out by NetWealth. They're doing pretty well.
Okay, cool.
Yep. But yeah, they provide some great insights into cash flow, and otherwise, it's honestly sometimes it's more manual. Sometimes it's genuinely going through a bunch of line item by line item saying, I can see that's a problem.
So on the cash one.
Yeah.
So I was in financial advice for many years, but I've been out of financial advice for effectively 10 years.
And in that 10 years, lots of things have happened positively.
Mm.
But there's been one thing that I have viewed as a massive negative, and that's the rise of gambling, especially for young men. And there's the overwhelming ability for them to gamble. And if the stereotype in the 70s and 80s were the women took money and went shopping, which was a stereotype, the reality is now as young blokes blow their money on gambling.
Yep.
How do you handle that when you're talking with a couple or trying to change manage? Like, it's tough. And incidentally, I'm not a big fan of the government making all money from this. That's Andrew Rox's own opinion. Everyone, not Alex, it's not the business. But yeah, how do you handle those combos?
I fundamentally agree with you. I think gambling is a massive problem growing in this country.
It's targeting the people that you're wanting to serve. But I just feel like they're making all the money and you're picking up the shit at the end.
The way that we can try and circumvent the extent of the problem, like on a client-by-client basis, yes, I'd love the government to step in and do something high level.
Yeah.
But what I can do, boots on the ground advisor, is that we can create systems to capture the cash flow before it's spent.
Yeah.
And that's
a bit of tough love, right? So a bit of that, helping themselves help themselves.
Pay yourself before you spend.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And okay, and I think that as days turn into months and months and turn into years and they get that culture, they'll feel pretty proud of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is why we really only want to take clients on who want to engage on an ongoing basis. I hate doing one-off advice because I think, and yes, I acknowledge I'm a little bit biased here. I think the main, a huge amount of the value of an advice is on that in that ongoing relationship, that ongoing account.
Oh, absolutely.
And not doing that, you can't show them their progress as well. Yeah. It's.
And given the age of the clients, so funds under advice would be all accumulated orientated. So, you know, if whether they've got their superannuation or non-super, et cetera. And given that you are self-licensed, are there any particular strategies that you do with investment? As far as, do you do SMAs? Do you do MDAs? You know, is there any strategies that you're employing?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. We have tried to think about perhaps not just the business of right now, but the business we want to be and the business we want to grow into and what is, to a degree, scalable and efficient and places the value back onto our main client value proposition, which is strategic, holistic guidance for the client. Portfolio management, obviously a very important part of wealth creation, but I think clients derive more value from our strategic guidance, all their finances working together.
Map out your financial garden. I've read your website.
There you go. Yeah. SMAs, though, are a hugely important part of our business. So we have a couple of providers that we really enjoy working with there. The efficiencies at a practice level are massive. Having a client have a efficient, regularly rebalanced portfolio, incredibly transparent, incredibly like the ownership nature of an SMA is fantastic. So I think it's an evolution. I think there's still some reporting issues with SMAs, but that's another topic. But fundamentally, yes, we build our investments off the back of SMAs and then add
something. In the future, as the amounts get more, it's going to be you're just building something that's not going to have to be rebuilt, yeah?
Exactly. Yep.
And how do you handle life insurance advice?
Yeah, we have a couple of different options there. So depending on what type of client, you know, they are, we'll either write it ourselves, personal advice. But we've also recognized that adds a lot of cost, complexity, and time to the process. Any client who just approaches us for insurance only, we'll actually refer out to one of our referral partners for general advice.
Got it.
Because I think that's actually often a better outcome for those clients who perhaps don't want the expense of the personal advice.
I'm a believer, Alex. Been in planning for years. In all those years, I only ever did full advice, but there's a big cohort where the general advice.
Exactly.
Way better than not getting advice.
100%.
It's way better than not getting covered.
Yes.
Which is
so give the client both pathways. Yes.
So you're doing that. Okay, great. So, and then, do you and your business, do you follow any business coaching, any philosophies? Is there any sort of guiding principle when you sit down with your team?
No, it's probably something I am a little bit too time for to really engage with, although obviously there's a large return on investment there. But I think as the business continues to grow, when you're good at business, you end up good at the financial planning business, you end up seeing clients less. a bit of a net shame of our business, but I think that's true of a lot of professions. And I think perhaps an element of coaching could be helpful there. I'm part of a few groups. So I join another self-licensed practice owner group. We all met on Ensemble, actually.
Awesome. Right. You did tell me about this.
Yeah. So we meet once a month on a Friday. Practices of varying sizes, some, you know, fresh start, some decades old, some off the back of accounting practice, getting different perspectives of what's worked for them.
Yeah.
We all present our business and talk about problems.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And that's every month, right?
Yeah. It's a really healthy opportunity to learn from others.
Yeah.
It's a really open forum, so we are quite honest with the things that we're experiencing, and people can come with ideas and solutions, try and help.
Yeah. I don't know if it's an open group or a closed group, but if you're an advisor listening, this is something that if you want a bit of guidance in doing that, just reach out to Ensemble Community.
Yeah.
We can geolocate. We've got 11,500 advisors. We can geolocate people close for run clubs or coffees or whatever you want, right?
Those little pods.
Yeah.
Natural pods that you form. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. And Emily knows everyone and everyone knows Emily. So that works out really well.
There you go.
And before I get into the team, I love the fact that you've got clearly defined service packages.
Yeah.
So, which have got great names, seed, spring, bloom and flourish. And that goes through the life stages and complexities. So how do you do your fees? So you've kind of mentioned that you're doing a lot of things and people out there love the concept of what you're doing, but sometimes it's hard because the clients potentially don't have the big funds.
Mm.
What's sort of the methodology of charging for you?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And it's something we have reviewed in the last 12 months and thought deep and hard about. What are the pillars of value that we're adding to the client?
Because you're best to charge them at the time they feel the most value.
Correct.
Yeah.
And for us, really, we broke it down to three main areas that we add value to the client. The first one, which is, so we basically run a hybrid fee model.
Yep.
Where there's a flat fee element.
Yep.
A percentage fee on funds under management.
Yep.
And we've got referral arrangements for other ancillary services like mortgages, general life insurance.
Yep.
And so we thought long, well, okay, what do we think is the thing that helps set us apart and that we do exceptionally well? We think it's strategic, holistic financial planning.
Yep.
And I think financial planning and financial advice is often interchangeable terms. I don't necessarily think they should be, because I don't know that everyone excels at being a planner.
Because planning, you're doing it with them, and advice, you're giving them something they have to do. Is that right?
Planning is helping them make decisions that may not be investment related at all. It may be a life decision. Should they go and take 12 months off? You know, should they go and take a sabbatical, or do they, I don't know, help their grandparents out? Like, should they upgrade the family home? Like, not an investment decision. Everything's so interrelated. It's fine.
That's done on your fixed or your fees.
Correct. Yeah.
And ultimately, what all you're looking to do there is you're looking to get a cost plus some profit of those time.
Yep.
And with all of your services that you can do that you've outlined and you've got some strategic alliances there, you are offering all those services, but because you're doing joint ventures with a lot of them, you don't have the capital outlay. So you can offer something. You can be bigger than what you can today be as big as your ambition is.
Yes.
Okay. And you can grow into that ambition
as
well, which interestingly, setting that foundation of client expectations then allows you to plan for the future. Given that you are growth orientated and having a look at your team, you've got advisors. We've spoken about Ben's role in driving clients in.
Yep.
You've got a client service manager, client officers, you've got an administration manager, and you've got a para planner. Mm-hmm. So you've effectively built one solid big pot.
Yeah.
At what stage does your business get to where you either need to find another advisor or you need to grow your back office?
Yeah.
What's the numerics around? What do you think? Is it number of retained families? Is it based on new business flow? When will it be? And is it soon?
It is soon. I'm always having discussions about finding the right talent, because I think often you need to lay down some groundwork to find the right people, the right culture fit. I think for us in this growth stage of our journey, it's definitely more around client flow than numbers. And because we'll
have new business coming through, yeah?
Correct, yeah.
So what does a new, like, where do you think your new business figures will be that high that you just have to have another person?
I think if we're bringing on, because I'm already getting closer and closer to capacity, even if she's still building her book.
Yeah.
If the referral arrangements and partnerships that we've built exceed probably somewhere between 70 and 80 a year,
yep,
then I need a new advisor.
Yeah, also most advisors would say if they've got retained clients of 120, which is sort of like a year and a half of 50 new client flow,
yep,
they're full.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that if you just kept doing what those numbers, that you need a new AR, a new partner AR every 1.5 years.
Yeah. I'd like that to be every 1 year.
Yeah. It just comes down to making their first number bigger, which you're sowing the seeds to do.
Exactly.
Through engaging employers, through meaningful joint ventures, those sorts of things, yeah?
Yeah, the tricky part is when you add the capacity to also help the advisor do what they do best and deal with clients. So as you add the back office at the same time, scale that up, hopefully getting the timing correct.
It's expensive, man.
It is expensive, yeah.
So you're building capacity, so for Hopium, right? So
yeah,
you're putting actual money down today for hope in the future.
Yep.
And planners are natural optimists. So quite often we overplay that hand.
Well, often it's one of two ways, right? You either build the capacity early for Hopium,
yeah,
or the alternative is that you haven't built the capacity quick enough and just bursting at the seams and everyone's stressed and it's a horrible workplace all of a sudden. So
yeah, but
getting that timing right is so hard.
I don't know where the middle is. Both ones. It's really, really interesting. And so you've got a couple of – so in relation to building out your team, I'm talking to you in Pitt Street, Sydney. You've got an office in Sydney CBD.
Yep.
Where do your team reside? Where are they?
Yeah, they all over Sydney, to be honest, but all come in. Like we love a hybrid culture. We want people to have that interaction, those casual, informal chats that I think build culture and improve just productivity, to be honest. However, I'd be an absolute hypocrite if I didn't say, well, we also need to create a culture of well-being, and sometimes that doesn't result in, you know, a mandatory return to office 5 days a week. I want to see you at your desk by 9 a.m. every day. So there's an element of flexibility, but we do want those core days in the office to keep building culture.
And culture is also sharing knowledge as well, right?
Yeah.
So the type of advisor or the type of person to work in your team, what are the attributes that you feel they need to have?
I mean, I would start probably number one with hunger. And having that growth mindset.
Well, if they're a young-ish person, say under the age of 40, hunger is implied in Sydney because you've got to pay your mortgage or buy a house. So if you're not hungry, you're in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think also as in the financial advice industry, we don't talk about it enough in that we don't set with our advisors measurable goals. In a way, I think we do ourselves a disservice. We're so busy advising clients how to set goals, how to create ambition, how to grow their wealth. When do we ever apply those learnings to ourselves and think about, well, what do I want out of this career, this life? And so I think that's a really important conversation to have, and that culture to build is helping this workplace be something that can enable some dreams for the advisor.
I'm just thinking back. I identified that in my practice quite a few years ago. And I think, and if they're listening, they'll probably text me saying, got that wrong. But I think what we did was, as part of our package, we would give them an allocation of money that they could use for financial advice or accounting,
yeah,
or even wills with our other divisions. And so that was sort of like part of their package, and they could utilize it.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the mechanics of whether I paid them and they paid the thing or whatever it was, but it was very much that we never wanted to have a situation where
one of our own advisors had an accident and wasn't fully insured or something like that, right? Definitely that's agreed. That's that you've got to do that. Then that's just my example of how it worked. And in my 15 years of running that business, we had three insurance claims on, thankfully no deaths, but three insurance claims that were IP and trauma related for our employees, all of which paid out. There you go. Interesting.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've got all these resources at our fingertips, but we don't apply them to our own people. And I'm passionate about my clients making smart financial decisions, I should be just as passionate about my team making the same decisions.
So how do you measure performance of your team?
Yeah. It's an evolving process for sure. Pure quantitative metrics, a lot of it's done through Monday tracking, completion of file against benchmarks, et cetera. So that's fine. But I think there's also a qualitative human element of helping them continue to improve and be the best version of themselves. And so, yeah, we factor in a lot of regular monthly catch-ups with teams. We've got forms that staff can complete if they've got issues, trying to help anonymize an element of
Like a Microsoft form sort of thing. Is it?
Yeah, correct. Google Forms for us, but same. Just have that space to be human, have problems, help, but also engage with them and help find an environment that they can succeed in. So
that sounds like that you're going to have to do a lot of that.
Early days, yeah. Look, our practice.
It doesn't sound like you don't enjoy it. It sounds like you do enjoy it, but maybe as you grow, that might be something that you'll have to industrialize. Well, that sounds like taking the heart out of it, doesn't it, Andrew? It is one of those things that the fast-growing businesses grapple with, because you want growth-orientated clients. You're getting clients that are – the upside of getting clients in your demographic is they might start with you on $200,000, and in 5 years' time they might be on $300,000 or $400,000. Yeah. So they're growing. But the hard thing's going to be when you get to the stage where you have to make strategic steps in your business.
Yeah.
But the good thing is you think deeply about it, right? So that's it. And so you're in Sydney, and if someone was to come on board, you'd want them to be able to be in the office couple of days a week.
Yeah.
But although you do have that workplace flexibility, you yourself in your own family are sort of an example of that. How do you reward your team? I mean, it's early doors, and you're self-licensed.
Yeah.
So have you got a goal for the financial year, or how do you measure things?
Yeah. Often some quite lofty goals about revenue growth and profitability growth, but we try to have open forums with the team, share the financials, share the health of the business.
Take me through that.
Yeah.
I've done that. And when I was at VBP, we had an open book policy for our 1,500 team members.
Yeah.
And they knew all our numbers and they got a share in the game, right? There was a methodology behind it. So, yeah, you're saying that your team members are aware of the revenue coming in, the cost of that revenue. There might be some sensitivities around individuals' employment arrangements. That's quite common. But yeah, so you've got them going line by line so they understand the business, yeah?
Yeah, it's a quarterly catch-up and look at the state of the business and talk about profitability and then also creating an incentive structure that aligns with where the business is at. Because if we're on this big growth focus, growth journey, and we're taking the profit, pushing it back into the business, trying to continue the growth, then we're sacrificing profits for continued growth.
That's right. But and the people on your journey are sacrificing potentially profits for the growth as well. So have you got some sort of long-term vision for bringing more people in as sort of stakeholders in the business?
Yeah. I suppose my point was the incentive structure should be aligned to the growth journey, so that we shouldn't be setting, we need net profit to be X amount before you receive your bonus, because that's not the journey the business is currently on.
Yeah, because you've got to reinvest into growing new clients.
It's more like a revenue growth goal instead.
Correct.
But yeah, definitely we want the growth of the business to reward the people who are enabling it and working hard for that. So I'm very open with everyone that we bring on, that we want to create a structure that enables them. And that's why we want to talk about their goals. What are your goals? Is the goal to buy that new home in the eastern suburbs or the northern beaches? What do you want out of this career and journey? And how can we make that happen? How can we create the structure, the remuneration that enables those goals? And it's not the same reward system for everyone because everyone's goals are a little bit different. Maybe we will in future standardize that element, but I think it's at the moment it's a horses for courses approach. How do we motivate and incentivize people in the best way possible?
Absolutely. And look, Seedly, the fact that you are deliberate around the types of clients you want to service, the fact that you are will handle insurance, the fact that you will handle mortgages, whether reviewing them or getting people in them. You know, full disclosure, we've got a business arrangement there. What that does do is it services a massive need.
Yeah.
If I put my other hat on, my other business generates hundreds of unadvised clients. So we service a lot of advised clients in Lydian, but we also generate clients who come directly to us. Mm-hmm. And it's harder than you think to allocate them to a planner.
Yep.
Because my goal is I want everyone advised, and part of the reason is because planners who are generalists are just hard.
Yeah.
So not that you can be great people, and when I get to know you, I'll find out what your niche is, but quite often it starts at the website. They don't tell you enough about like what they're all about and who they're doing, and I'm just giving you a bit of a compliment that I know exactly that if we get clients that look and feel like that, you're going to be in pretty serious consideration to be referred because we know what we're getting.
Yeah.
So if you're a listener out there and you're sort of haven't actually made a decision around the types of people that you're looking to attract, the types of team members, I just urge you to just to do what Alex has done. It wasn't that, you know, he's done this over, you know, quite a few years to get to this point. But if you stand for nothing, it's just hard to be referred to is my 2 cents worth, right? And we get a lot of referrals a year.
I agree. I think if your website reads like a menu of things that you do and people you could potentially service, and it's, you know, it's like your old school Chinese restaurant. There's 100 different items on there. It makes you very hard to, you know, if you're not standing for anything, well, how can anyone want to work with you? They don't know that you're the right fit for them. So we intentionally built our brand, our website, very intentionally around who we want to attract, not just because they're who we want to work with, but it's also that's who we think we add most value to. I don't think I do a great job with someone in their 80s looking to manage their wealth and make it last.
There's great aged care specialists who do that.
There are so many great businesses servicing different
yep.
parts of the client journey.
Yep.
I'll happily hand over and refer to them. But we want to really own this young professional space, this I hate the term accumulators. We call them our grow getters. I know it's corny, but
I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it. I'm a dad as well, right? Dad jokes roll.
Yes.
So
as soon as we wrote it down, I was like, that's perfect. They're our grow getters. Those are our people.
And everyone rolled their eyes.
Yeah.
Thanks, Unc. And so part of what you've just said there is also it brings me to sort of the direction of Ensemble. And so for many years, Ensemble catered for everyone and a very broad church but we always knew that there were niches within and in fact, organic growth around, as you've said, you catch up with a group that was sort of, the idea was from an Ensemble get together or whatever it was. But, you know, in 2026, if you haven't already, if you're listening and you haven't already checked out the member site, on the Ensemble website, I urge you to do that because what our main goal is to get people like Alex talking to other people like Alex, or Venetia talking to other Venetias and just having that more concentrated, alignment, in that niche. So I urge you to check out the members, have a look at the additional things that you can get in that because we're all about the positive evolution of financial advice. But 10 years on, we know that ideas are everywhere and people need to find buddies that can help them execute.
Yeah.
Which is sort of, you know, what we're talking about today, isn't it?
There's so much power in the Ensemble community. I know I've benefited greatly from it. Just I love the evolution of the financial advice industry. You know, the fallout of the Royal Commission, we've seen advisor numbers halve. And the people who have remained and the people continuing to enter the industry really bloody want to be here.
Yeah.
Like, you've worked hard, you've caught up your education, or now your education standards are so much higher. You've got to do your professional year, which is not super easy either. The people here are so determined to add value to our clients' lives. And it's just become a much more collaborative industry as well. I find numbers have dropped. Look, let's be real. Like, competition has dropped. So there's more clients than any advisor can service. If you're doing well, then clients aren't really the issue. It's just how do you keep growing the business in the way that you want.
That's right. And clear articulation really is critical. And that starts from the type of clients, the service packages, and all the rest of it, which you seem to have nailed. But Alex, had a tremendous conversation today. You're a very engaging business person who I feel would have a lot of affinity with the team members that you work with. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. I'm really looking to see the growth of this business. We've got a couple of numbers down here. So I think when we come back in a couple of years, I expect to see a couple of hundred more new clients in the business. But on behalf of the engine room, on behalf of myself, and I'd like to thank you for your time today. And if you're out there and sort of anything other than some of the song choices, which, you know, they are polarizing, right? But they're actually pretty good. If you're out there and you think that you'd like to learn more, we can put some links in, Karen. We can have a look there and maybe even just articulate what your perfect avatar would be. It might be today for an advisor, but I can tell you a practice that where the company generates interest in new clients is quite desirable for a certain type of advisor who wants to just get in there and do it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, thanks, Roxy, for having me on. Like, it's been a pleasure sharing our journey, and we're just getting started. So this is an exciting growth period for us, and yeah, looking to find the people that we want to grow with for the long term. Yeah.
And with that, we've finalized the most horticultural references in engine room history. Thank you very much, Alex.
Thank you.